Hey, everybody, welcome to another exciting episode of the People of Packaging podcast. I am elated. I got it. I've trying to use like more fun vocabulary words because I re-listen to some of my episodes. I'm like, I say the same things all the time. I'm elated to be joined by a return guest. His name is Chris Davidson. He is the Vice President of Sustainability at WestRock. We are going to be reintroduced to Chris, just learn a little bit about how he got into his role as a VP covering sustainability for one of the world's leading packaging companies, and just talk about some cool stuff that they are working on. I'm excited for this conversation. If you haven't already, go listen to his first episode, which the audio quality is probably way worse. And I probably asked terrible questions. I think it was like episode 10 or something like that. But you can at least see how far we've come to this point. So you can go check out his first episode. I'll have that link down in the show notes. Let's hear from SpecRite and Myers, and then we'll get right to this interview with Chris Davidson.
SpecRite allows us to centralize our spec data in an easy-to-use and searchable platform, puts everyone on the same page with up-to-date information, and helps us to adapt quickly to business needs and sustainability reporting.
Today's podcast is also brought to you by Myers, which is where I work my day job and coincidentally is the most sustainable printing company in the country. Myers is a third generation family business on a mission to create a sustainable future for people, products, and our planet. To learn more, click the link down below in the show notes. All right, as promised, I'm joined here by my friend, the man, the myth, the legend, Chris Davidson. So Chris and I have connected up a couple different times. This was maybe going on a year-ish ago, Chris, that we reconnected at the Circularity Conference, or it might have been SPC. I don't remember which one it was.
It was also at PAC Expo. We saw each other at PAC Expo as well.
Yeah, yeah. It's like this. It's like packaging is a small industry or something like that. It's crazy. It is. But what I think is really cool about the industry is being able to watch, you know, people that I've met now, in some cases 5 or 6 years ago through this podcast, and just kind of see, you know, what they've been able to do, cool things they've been able to do in their careers, and to have them come back on. And in your case, you know, you're still just doing awesome stuff at WestRock. So I'm excited to talk about that a little bit, but I would love for you to reintroduce yourself to the audience in case people didn't want to go back and re-listen to that episode. So, sure. Welcome to the podcast, Chris. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Adam. Great to be back and talking with you again. And I think you don't give yourself enough credit. If I remember correctly, you know, we had a really good time during that first interview. We talked a lot about, you know, Jamaica and coffee and your love of music. So I'm looking forward to more of that today. But it's been, I think, probably close to 4 years, 3 or 4 years since we last talked. Mm-hmm. And at that time, I was the director of sustainability, global sustainability at WestRock. I'm now the vice president. So, my team has changed a little bit. Team has grown a little bit. Still working on a lot of the same things, trying to move the company forward in terms of our commitments. At that time, we still had the commitments that we have today, a set of three pillars around people and communities, bettering the planet, innovating for our customers and their customers, heavy focus on plastic replacement in terms of packaging. That's where we think we can have a real impact. And so we can talk a little bit more about some of the new things going on there. Still living in Richmond, Virginia, still loving it over here. And looking forward to discussing more about what's happening both in our world, but also in your world, and where those two worlds align.
Yeah, for sure. How far away is Richmond, Virginia from Washington, D.C.? Because I was just there recently, and I thought...
It's pretty close. Oh, you should have called me. It's pretty close. Now, I say close. On a good day, from my door to D.C. downtown is maybe an hour and 45 minutes. On a bad day, it could be 2.5-3 hours. So just depends.
Sure. Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah. I was there with my daughter. So with each of my kids, I've been able to take them when they turn 10, we go do like a father child trip. And nice. So my daughter really wanted to go to Washington, D.C. She's my youngest daughter. And then I've got one more kiddo who's 8. And then and then I'll never go on a trip with him again.
No more trips.
No more trip for you kids. And they do remind me that they've gotten progressively closer. And so, like with my oldest son, who's now 16, we went to India. And with my oldest daughter, wow, we also went to India. And then my middle daughter turned 10 during COVID. And so we were just trying to figure out what we could go do. We ended up waiting for a little bit, and she wanted to go to New York City. So we went to New York City. And then my youngest daughter, she wanted to go to DC. That's like the least interesting thing we're going to talk about today. But I had never been to DC as an adult. And it was
a great city.
For me, I've been to every major city, and I don't mean to disparage any of the big cities, you know, Chicago, Houston, Dallas, New York City, LA, San Francisco, sure, Minneapolis. I don't know if they would qualify or not. But Washington, DC was my favorite of all the big cities. We stayed kind of right. We could walk to, I almost said the Washington Bullets, where the Wizards play. So we went and watched a game. You know, kind of there near Chinatown, and there's just so much history, you know, American history, obviously.
Yeah.
But it's very walkable. It was very, it didn't feel, you know, like unsafe for me, to just be walking around with my daughter. It was a really cool city. So I was digging it.
Yeah, no, I head to DC pretty often. My daughter's up there actually as well. And, yeah, it's a great city, easy to move around. And just a lot of different things you can do no matter what your tastes are.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm recalling back, you had mentioned our previous conversation something like 4 or 5 years ago. I don't remember, 3, 4, or 5. I honestly can't remember time.
Well, yeah, after COVID, time has really messed with my head. So I get the dates mixed up.
It's so bad. But I remember us talking about music, and I remember us talking about Jamaican Blue Mountain Coffee being incredible.
Best in the world.
And that is because if I recall, that's part of your upbringing, correct?
Yes, it is. Yes. So actually I was born in England and lived there. My dad was working over there at the time. We moved back to Jamaica. Both my parents are Jamaican, and I went to high school in Jamaica. And so, you know, obviously formative years there, and then specifically decided to come over to the United States because I was interested in studying forestry. Once I graduated, I decided to stay over here. I've been here for the majority of my adult life, and you know, working in the forest products industry, packaging industry, really has been fantastic. I've enjoyed just about every minute of it, and you know, many different roles, different focus areas. Sort of started out on the natural resources side. So I actually was a forester. I was responsible for managing land, managing the resource that we use in our packaging today, and then different roles that have led up to, you know, when we first met. When I was working as director of when we first met, I was not the director of sustainable forestry. That's what I came over to Richmond for, but I was leading sustainability for that at that time, and now sort of doing it just at a little bit higher level and with a little bit more of a global focus.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, since we had the interview, I'm trying to figure out if you are the first repeat guest, that the first one was like pretty well before COVID, and then the second appearance is sort of after COVID. But I would be curious about your role, and specifically the, you know, paper-based products. It seems as though it's been through its own sort of tumultuous journey, I guess, in terms of, you know, there's this incredible need, and then it was like, oh, we can't meet the needs, and then, you know, we've got that, I guess that was with paper-based liner, but there was like a strike over in Finland, and so in the label printing industry, we couldn't get labels to people because of paper-based, you know, liners that just couldn't go out the door. It's just crazy how interconnected the whole thing.
Yeah.
And I think COVID really showed the global impact of forestry and the global impact of, you know, how connected we are through the paper base and the forest industry. So I'd be curious, what's this journey been like over the last 4 years for you navigating COVID? But during COVID, there was you also had this explosion in e-commerce, and which led to an explosion of just the need for paper-based packaging.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a really, really interesting thing to kind of dig into. You know, from a personal perspective, of course, you know, before COVID, you know, I was in the office every single day. And honestly, when COVID started, I wasn't sure that I'd be able to adapt, right? I know, you know, some of us had already been working, you know, part-time from the office. Everybody went to full-time at the office. So just from a personal perspective, that was a big change for me. You know, as an organization, we've moved back to a, sort of a hybrid model where some of us are in the office more than others. My travel has picked up again. I actually enjoyed having a little bit of time off, not traveling so much during COVID. My travels has picked up again. But
same thing here. I really, yeah. really did enjoy it.
Yeah. But, you know, as you said, you know, e-commerce really changed and reemphasized the importance of packaging, right? Whether it's, you know, what your products are, you know, large, whether they're small. And we've also seen, you know, a move towards a recognition of the value of paper-based packaging from a renewable fiber perspective. What I really thought was interesting, if I don't know if you remember, at the beginning of COVID, when everybody was locked down, there were some folks who sort of took an approach and a look and said, well, what's happening from sort of the environmental perspective? What's happening out there? And you saw things like, you know, and I'm probably going to get these stories wrong, but like, you know, birds coming back into places that they had not been before, you know, different species of marine animals coming into places that had not been before because humans weren't around. And so there was a move back, and it kind of, in my opinion, made people think more about our connectedness and our closeness to nature and the importance of that. And, you know, I think there was also a feeling that, you know, because of all of the activities, all of the stress and concerns there were globally, that a lot of companies would sort of pull back from sustainability and pull back from their all of their commitments. Instead, we've seen much more, you know, an increase, if you will. You know, people are yeah. more concerned about, you know, sustainability and the commitments that they've made. And it's been a benefit for companies like us. You know, we talked a little bit about, you know, plastics and plastic replacement in terms of packaging and what consumers want. And so it's been a real positive for fiber-based packaging. People are recognizing that there are things that you can do with paper-based packaging that maybe they hadn't thought about. So yeah, it's been a bit of a journey, but it's been, I think, a positive journey both for our organization and for the industry.
Yeah, and I think that if you look at something like paper-based packaging on the whole, my general feeling is that consumers know what to do with paper-based packaging. There's not a lot of ambiguity to it. You know, yeah. We've been recycling boxes for most of my entire life. I've known, like, if you have a box, you can put it in the recycle bin and it's likely to get recycled. And I don't know, you know, you read various things about recycling rates of stuff like corrugated or folding carton board. But by and large, it's a widely recycled material. It doesn't have to have necessarily the absolute, like, perfect pristine conditions around which it can be recycled. That there's a little bit of malleability, you know, within the recycling. For example, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm sure. almost positive we're all good with pizza boxes. Is this correct?
Yes. Okay. I was going to bring that up in case you didn't. Yeah, I mean that was a myth that was going around for a long time that you couldn't recycle them.
And we've
been very successful in dispelling that myth.
Okay, and I was like 99.72% sure but in case there's a little off chance. But I was in a meeting actually this week with a whole group of people who work for a very large organization, and we ended up in a conversation about pizza boxes and pizza box recycling because everybody in that room buys pizza. Like, we're recording this on a Friday. We do Pizza Fridays in my house. Pizza, I think, even during, you know, especially during COVID, I would guess, I don't track pizza sales, but I would guess that they went up, you know, yeah. pizza deliveries went up. And so pizza box consumption went up, and, you know, we really do have to be out there saying, like, no, this is fine. As long as there's not food in there, but, you know, some of the oils and stuff like that, not impactful because this process is there. And I think that coupled with the global push towards sustainability, you know, from big governments, like I got to go to COP28 in Dubai. So you have big governments meeting with big companies and big organizations that are all coming together saying, we have to do something about this. We have a responsibility for this. And that is, I think, the lane in the environment around which something like paper-based and fiber-based packaging is really starting to grow and expand. Because not because it's perfect, right? It's not the absolute perfect solution for everything, but where you can find a good solution, where you can use it, I think a lot more brands are pressing into it and even willing to spend more for it if they have to, because of that, of, you know, the end of life for it is so easy to determine.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I couldn't have said it better myself. It's almost like, you know, I primed you to put that out there. So that's fantastic.
Could people tell I was just reading your notes right off the screen? I did not get those notes from anybody.
No.
That was a freestyle. I went full Eminem and just went 8 Mile and off. That was off the dome as the
nice.
I don't think the kids would say that. I don't think the kids would say off the dome.
No, but seriously, you know, I mean, the way you described it, you know, it's true. You know, paper cannot do everything. Plastic has its place and is much better than paper in some situations. But there are also situations where we've been using other materials where paper does make sense, where paper can, you know, do a great job, provide the product, security, safety that you need, provide brands with the you know, the marketing space that they're looking for. And so I think what's happening is, you know, as you said, you know, it's all being driven by these outside forces that are making people think a little bit more deeply about, you know, what does my packaging really need to look like? What substrate do I really need to use? And so we're being able to have those conversations and do a little bit more. And, you know, you mentioned that when we were talking, I think it was maybe in the beginning, about our can collar product.
Right? I was going to go there. Yeah, that's so, it's so cool to see that.
Yeah. So this is a paperboard based replacement for plastic rings. And even if, you know, when we first talked about it, you and I mean, that was sort of the original designs. That was a very early stage. We've made multiple innovations since then, different types. So now we have, you know, can collar, not just for cans, but also for PET bottles, different structures. So not just the flat structure, but also what we're calling our shield products that have a little bit more security and you know, coverage for the different products that they're holding. And these are just, you know, here you go. It's a family of durable paperboard-based multi-pack solutions for cans, but also now for PET bottles. And so we've had a lot of success with that, not only here in the US with some of our craft beer folks, but also overseas, a great partnership with Coca-Cola Euro-Pacific Partners. And we're implementing not just the package itself, but also machinery as well. So we have an automation division that allows us to work very closely with these customers and allows us to put these different types of substrate profiles into the customer, allows them to increase their efficiency, increase their production. And so we've done it I mentioned the Coca-Cola one. We've done it with ABI as well, AB InBev, and our can collar Fortuna is a machine that really allows those packs to be grouped in different ways. We can do things like also orient the cans so that, you know, as the cans run down the packaging line, we can orient them so that they're all facing the same direction. So it's just been a whole lot of innovation and progress over the last few years.
So I if you're listening to this podcast and you're not looking at the audio, I did surprise Chris by just pulling up a quick the WestRock site to look at this can collar, because I think the visuals are really awesome as well. So you're telling me, when you're just mentioning that you can take, so these are unbranded cans here on the website, but if all six of these cans were coming down the line, you could actually orient the can so that they all face the same way, and then the can collar went over them. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. So orientation is part of the automation process. Yeah.
That's
important for our brands.
For sure. Right. I mean, you know, shelf presence is everything. And, you know, I learned at one point in time, I was asking a brand why they used folding cartons, because they had a label on a bottle and it was for some vitamins. And I was like, well, why are you putting these things in a folding carton? And they said, because we can't control how the label sits on the shelf. They don't know if it's our brand, if it gets turned around or whatever. If it's right. in a box, we have the billboard. We can control it. We know how it's faced. They can see it. They know it. And that was the first time I was like, oh, that makes a ton of sense why you'd want to have this stuff reoriented. And I worked at Walgreens, the overnight shift at Walgreens, where I had to go through the whole store at 2 o'clock in the morning and
turn them around.
Oh yeah.
That was wow.
My first job out of college. It was a glorious job. I did enjoy it. I didn't realize you had all of these different expansions, honestly, on this can collar line. So we're looking at here, we've got the can collar X. There was the Eco Plus and what's the Shield Plus? This thing. Oh, yeah, that so goes over the top.
So basically it's the same thing, but it basically provides a little bit of covering if you have situations where the customer wants the cans to have a little bit of extra protection on the top. It's just another piece of paperboard wrapped around so the tops of the cans aren't open to the air. You know, they're covered and provides a little bit more protection.
Got it. And then this final one here, is it Prem Collar and Prem Collar Pure?
Yeah.
And so you're telling me, by the way, for all these options, and I count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different options here on the website, that for all of these, if there's a beverage company that is like, yeah, we want to take a look at this, you're saying like WestRock comes in with not only the solutions for the printing, for the die cutting, but also coming in and putting in the equipment so these things can be applied so that they don't have, there's no more excuses for them. They just.
Yeah. I mean, we have a great automation business. We've had it for a number of years, that provides different portfolios of machinery that will allow for all of these different, types of packaging that we have, all these different, modules, and it can be automated, and we can, you know, fit it into the situation that the customer already has. They're modularized, so we can add different pieces to it depending on how complex they want their situation to be. So it's just the opportunity is there. Come in and talk to us, and we can help you figure out a solution.
That's cool. Well, I was going to ask you a question about this, and I closed it out, and then it slipped my mind. I'll kind of go with this. So we've got all of this momentum happening with. I remember what I was going to say. If now you have a can, which you have these two products that are everybody knows what to do with. I mean, you could go to an elementary school kid and say, what do you do with this can? They would probably say, recycle it, right? And you say, what do you do with this paper? And they would say, recycle it. And they would be right. In most municipalities, you're going to be able to recycle both of those things. Nobody's going to be mad. Whereas if you had, you know, we'll say a PET that was that had a label on it that was not able to, you know, flake off in a recycling process, that may actually not get recycled. And most people don't know that. They might still dump it in the recycle bin. And so that's what I thought was really cool about that whole thing is that you have this entire system that is, you know, clear PET, as you mentioned. I think you said you have a PET option, yeah. Which is widely recycled and easy to recycle. You've got aluminum, which again is, as long as there's not a shrink sleeve or a label on it, another PSA, if there's a label or shrink sleeve on the aluminum can, please take it off. Recycle it. But it's easy to recycle, right? And then you have the paper, which is also easy to recycle. So the end of life, there's no real questions anymore for the consumer. And I thought that was just really cool.
Well, yeah, it's true. I mean, and you know, we both know that to make things work, you have to make it easy for the consumer. And the average consumer, I think it's fair to say, you know, if they're, well, I think you have two types. You have folks who say, you know, well, I believe it's going to be recycled, or I hope it's going to be recycled. You know, that whole wish cycling. So they'll just throw just masses of stuff in the recycling bin, which of course creates waste at the MRF. You end up with a higher carbon footprint, et cetera, et cetera. And then others who are just like, well, I don't really understand this whole recycling. Probably I should just throw it away. But as you said, if it's a can, if it's paper, most people go, yeah, this is going to be recycled. I'll put it in there.
I know what to do with this, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's, So as I just checked the clock and I'm like, holy crap, Chris, we're at 25 minutes. And I'm like, don't worry about it. It's going to be fine. We're going to stay. But as we kind of look at wrapping this up here, I would be curious, because I know the canned callers have been out now for a little bit. Is there anything that you're like, yeah, but we just launched this, and there doesn't have to be, but I'd just be curious. And let's kind of give you the last word on just like what are some other cool things, or is there another cool thing that you're working on that has a really awesome sustainability story?
So I'll just mention a couple of things. So we're launching something called Evergrow, which is a sustainable produce solution. Think about the little punnets that you may get like tomatoes in, or those other types of small packaged baskets you see at the supermarket that are made out of plastic. These are made out of paper. And so it's meant to reduce or eliminate single-use plastic produce containers. That's one. Another one has been around for a while, the technology that we have. It's an end shield barrier coating. So it's a barrier coating that's going to replace a plastic polyethylene coating. We're using that on multiple different things. One of our big successes was with KFC, Kentucky Fried Chicken. We are able to utilize that paperboard for their launch of their secret recipe fries. If you're a KFC fan, you probably know what I'm talking about. So, a lot of smaller items that we're working on within the system. But what I'd say is, please, and this is an unabashedly shameful push, but, go out to our website, just if you're interested. See all the different options that we have. And the other thing is, we're happy to work with folks. We've done many, I guess you could call them sort of, Kaizen kind of events where we've brought in folks and we've talked about an issue or problem that they're having, and we've been able to help them either on just on the actual packaging solution side or even the automation side. So that's kind of what we're working on. The other thing I want to mention is, which I think, I'm very proud of, and I think the company is very proud of, all of the work that we're doing, we're still nevertheless very focused on decarbonization and our impact on the planet, right? Back in November, we announced that we had just signed two virtual power purchase agreements with Engie. Those power purchase agreements are going to provide a significant boost to us in the reduction of our scope two emissions. And, I just felt I couldn't leave without saying, we're still focused on the climate, still focused on our impact, and we're making some real, real progress here.
I love it. Yeah. And as you were talking, I was looking up some of these things, right? The Evergrow, and was it N-Shield? Is that the other one?
Yep, N-Shield. Uh-huh.
M-Shield, yeah. So I'll make sure that those are linked down in the show notes so that you can just easily click it and just go right to it, because I'm, as you know, Chris, I'm a man of the people, and I want to make it easy. So
I know.
And hopefully, I'm guessing you guys have like a sustainability report or something that I could, or maybe a press release relating to the Scope 2 emissions reduction.
We got both of those.
All right. All right, we'll have your marketing people get in touch with my marketing team, which is me, and we'll make sure we get those things in there. Well, Chris, as always, we managed to keep the hip hop references low, the sustainability conversation high, and we got our Jamaican Blue Mountain coffee back in there. Next time, though, we should actually be drinking some Jamaican Blue Mountain coffee.
I was thinking, yeah, the next time we do this, we actually need to be together. So we actually can drink some coffee together. Maybe you can change your intro music to some of that Wu-Tang.
Yeah, we can. I mean, it might have to be edited for the kids, but Wu-Tang's for the children. But you can see right here, I've got another mic. I've got a whole setup here in my studio. Nice. Come on over to Salt Lake City, and we will. I've got a record player. We can jam. Actually, my son went and saw the new Bob Marley movie the other day, and he was like, "I didn't know I didn't know about Bob Marley's story." And so,
yeah, I haven't seen that yet. I got to go see that. My daughter was saying it's really good.
Yeah, he enjoyed it. So we'll definitely. I just picked up a Brother Ali LP. If you've never heard him, he's an incredible hip hop artist. He's a legally blind albino Muslim rapper. From Minneapolis, and he currently lives over in Turkey. And I got to go see him. He came to Salt Lake City, and I got to go see him. It was awesome. So
you got to do all the fun stuff.
I got to do some fun things. So not often that hip hop artists come through Salt Lake City. So it was cool to see a guy that I've respected for a while. Well, that is a thank you. I was just looking up. We've got a shout out to Robbie here in our on our private chat saying that he could send something over. Thanks, Robbie, for hooking it up. Well, that's all I got. Chris, thank you so much. We're going to roll the end credits. Like I said, don't hang up. We're going to roll the end credits here. Make sure everyone go check out what they're doing at West Rock. Always some cool stuff and always a great time to spend with you, Chris. I appreciate it.
I appreciate you having me come back again.
Of course. We'll make it happen again. Thanks, Chris.
Take care.
Well, that is a wrap for the People of Packaging podcast. Hey, if you want some more packaging content, you can go pick up the book my wife and I wrote, Packaging Peaks in the Sticky Situation, available Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all sorts of places. And also, I want for you to go and follow my friends, Corey Connors. He hosts Sustainable Packaging with Corey Connors. It is incredible and it is wonderful. You can also go check out Avelio Matos's podcast, Packaging Unboxed. And you can check out the three of us every single Monday morning, 8:30 Mountain Time on LinkedIn, where we host the Packaging Today Show. It is hilarious, and packaging is only half the story. So go check it out.